3, 2.
What's up, everybody? My name is Jeff Gibbard, sometimes called Peter Parker. I'm a real life superhero, the founder of the Superhero Institute. I also run a small consultancy for myself called J. Gibbard LLC. And then I also am a, I spent a lot of my time as a senior brand strategist for Soul Marketing out of Austin, Texas. So I do a lot of work in brand, leadership, culture, marketing, and sales. But ultimately, I am a real life superhero, and I am trying to create a world in which there are more superheroes.
Cool, man. So what the heck's a superhero, Jeff? Define that for us, man, so we can start the conversation.
Yeah, man. So I think of it a little bit like a progression, right? Everybody is superpowered in some way. You have something that you are good at. You are uniquely better than other people at. It's a unique skill that you have. From superpowered, once you are able to acquire more superpowers and you acquire enough of them, I would put you in the category of, say, superhuman. And that's the ability to continually acquire new powers. But it's only until you actually have an ethical framework, a guideline of how you're going to use those powers, that you can be truly considered a superhero. Because you can be superhuman and use it for villainy. And I choose to impose a structure around it so that we're always using the gifts that we have to make the world a better place.
So you're more light side than dark side. You're more good than evil. You're more Hulk Hogan red and yellow instead of Hulk Hogan NWO. That's nice, man. I like that.
Yeah, well, I will say to that, though, that the secret is that it's sort of like in every villain, there is a sliver of good. And in every hero, there is a sliver of evil. And you can see that in storyline after storyline in the comics, but that no one is perfect and no one is like universally good or evil. And my evil side, though very small, is super dark. I mean, it's like when it comes out, if you get on my wrong side, it is not good. But that's such a rare occasion, but it's there. And I think that's the secret of like every person, whatever side of the villain hero spectrum you fall on, is like there is the other side in you, because we're all a balance, you know?
Wow. Yeah, no, I totally agree. That totally makes sense. But I would say it's more than balance, though. I think we have it there. And much like the Hulk, it's inside us. We're always angry, and insert your dark side there. It's just a matter of, how does it come out and why does it do that? So Jeff, how'd you get interested in superheroes, man?
Well, when I was a kid, I was really into Superman. Before I had before I was exposed to the complexities of, like, you know, more interesting and nuanced superheroes, I just liked Superman because he was, like, you know, all powerful. He could shoot lasers and he could fly and he was awesome. So I was a kid that was really into superheroes, primarily, again, Superman and a little bit of Batman. But then it took, like, there was like a giant gap in my life where I just was not into it at all. It like really wasn't a thing, but I was always ambitious. I always wanted to do great things. I always wanted to, you know, be the best at whatever I was trying to do. I failed most of the time, mind you. But it wasn't until actually the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie came out that I actually got back into superheroes. And it was that movie that I would really attribute like my reinvestment in superheroes. So from that point forward, I got really, really all in on the whole superhero thing and about, you know, really trying to grow yourself into the most, you know, for lack of a better term, powerful, but I guess the most capable person you can be, and then using those powers to make the world a better place. So I always saw getting better at marketing as being a thing that can make the world a better place if you brought the right type of spirit to it. Same thing with sales. If you learn how people work and you could influence and persuade them, so long as you have the right aims in mind when doing that and you're not trying to manipulate them for your own selfish gain, that's, you're becoming more powerful. You're becoming more of a, you know, a superhuman. And again, then when you put the right constraints around it, you know, and you get enough people doing that, you can actually change the world.
Awesome. So how do we find that balance, Jeff? How do we make sure that we're not all dark and not all light, that we actually have some yin and yang there?
It's a good question, man. I'm not exactly sure I know the answer. I know how I keep myself balanced is that you have to find healthy releases for the darker side of yourself, or for, you know, when you get, you know, let's say you're in client services and you get a really annoying client, or they're demanding of you, or they, you know, insult you in some way or insult your integrity. Like, the natural human reaction is to get defensive. It's to get angry. It's to get this. But if you try and remind yourself to take that as a learning opportunity and to try and grow from it, and if you do get angry, whatever, like, go try and work it off in some healthy way. I had an experience in the last 6 months. I'll leave it at that so that it doesn't narrow things down too much. But where I was really irritated with a particular client experience that I was having, and I knew I was going to have a call with this client. And I decided that morning when I went to go work out at the gym with my trainer, I just told him, I said, listen, I'm bottling up like a serious amount of like angst and aggression right now, and I want to let it out in a healthy way. What can we work on today? Can we lift some really heavy weights? Can we do something like that? So he put me on like deadlifts and like just kept stacking the plates until I was like, stop. And then at the very end, he gave me a sledgehammer and a giant tire, and he just made me wail on it for like, you know, 10 minutes or so. And I just left that and I was like, everything's fine. So on the one hand, you have to learn, I think, how to deal with negative emotions in a healthy way and not let them come out, because there can be long-term negative repercussions, not just for the other people that you're dealing with, but also for yourself. It's like you carry around that anger and any of that frustration, it kind of poisons you. So instead, you have to kind of learn how to transfer that into something that helps you grow. So that's on that side. On the side of not letting yourself get carried away with what you're good at, again, I think it's having a really strong purpose of why you're doing what you're doing and having good kind of ethical guardrails to keep you in line. So for lack of a better term, it's like, what is your brand and how do you stick to it and how do you live it every day?
Interesting. That's interesting. So Jeff, how do we find our brand, man? How do we find our inner superhuman, our inner superhero? How do we get there, man? How? And why is that so like core to what you do, man?
Yeah. So it's the superhero thing is so deeply personal to me because I see myself in those stories. And I'm going to give you like the rapid fire examples here. Batman was born out of the murder of his two parents. Spider-Man was born out of the murder of his uncle. Superman is an orphan from a planet that blew up and was raised by foster parents. All of these superhumans are born of tragedy. They're all conflicted and they all have some sort of a purpose that's driven from something that was painful. On my last day of high school, my mother got into a catastrophic car accident and had a traumatic brain injury. She was in the operating room for 8 or 9 hours, 8 or 9 pints of blood. They saved her life, but her life was never the same after. And I had the profound realization over the following decade that you never know when your number is going to get called. You never know when it's your last day here. You never know when it's all over. And for that reason, I'm very inspired to make sure that today matters and to make sure that when I wake up tomorrow, that I make that matter and that I make the next day matter. Because, and I was actually just talking about this a little bit with Leslie M on my podcast, but like I'm trying to do legacy work. Like I'm not living for, any sort of short-term gains here. Like I'm really trying to leave a mark behind that helps people on a bigger scale. It's bigger than what I'm doing for me. I'm trying to do something that's bigger for more people. So when you're in the world of legacy work, when you're trying to leave something behind, like obviously your ego can get a little out of control there. But the way I found my purpose is by confronting mortality. It's by understanding that I don't have that much time here. And if I don't have that much time here, I better think really hard about what I want to do with it. So that's how I recommend that people try to find their purpose, is confront the idea that you're not going to be here forever. And I'll tell you another recent example I came across I thought was really interesting. I've been reading a lot of philosophy recently, and I read like a series of summaries of different works of Friedrich Nietzsche. And there's an idea in it. I'll just summarize it. We're like, imagine if this life that you're living, imagine if you had to live this exact life, all of your choices, everything that you're doing. Imagine if you had to live that over and over and over and over, the exact same thing, that was your eternity, was living the life that you have. What sort of choices would you make? How would you then think about the work that you're doing, the why of what you're doing? Because if you think of it as like, I'm going to have to live this for the rest of my existence throughout eternity, you would make different choices. So I do a lot of thought experiments like that to try and remind myself that my life has to have some sort of a meaning, and I get to determine what that is. And that way, when I do the work that I do, it's living into that idea of leaving behind a legacy.
Wow. That's really deep, man. I studied some Nietzsche as well when I was in school, and a lot of his stuff really made me think that imagining this life, like right now, this is your heaven, your hell, whatever you believe, it really does change the way you look at your life. And it, to your point, I think it does help us find our purpose, because we think, ooh, well, maybe I'd like to do more of this, or maybe I'd like to do less of this. And we shift that around a little bit to get it in the right dosage, if you will, to get where we want to go. So That's so interesting. So how, I mean, Jeff, I've talked to people and I love the idea of legacy work, right? I mean, I do my best to do that as well. But sometimes, man, we got to survive. So how do we balance that, bro? How do we balance legacy with now?
I mean, I don't think you can do legacy work unless you do the now every day. And I think sometimes your now is going to shift as part of a longer timeline, right? Like, it's not like every day you get up, you have to do, you know, epiphany groundbreaking work. Sometimes you just have to put in the work to get there. You know, I just wrote a post recently called Paying Your Dues. And most of the time when we use that phrase, it's like the old guard saying like, oh, you have to suffer some slings and arrows and put in the work before, you know, before we, the old guards, will allow you to have your shot. I actually think of paying your dues as a different thing. You have to pay your dues to your future self, that the work that you're doing today is about making yourself better in the future, right? So I think of it as, you have to survive. Sometimes the game that you're playing right now, to be part of that legacy work, you might have to get through this particular challenge and trial that you're going through. And to that point, like, you know, I've been after big things my whole life, but I've had periods of time that were just like dark and awful. Like I had a period of my life in my early 20s where like I had no idea what I wanted to be, who I was going to be, what I wanted to do. I had just gotten fired, or actually just emphatically quit from a job as like as a waiter. And I was just surviving on ginger snaps and water for like a full week. And like, we were just so that we could like pay our electric bill. That was like how like post-college poor I was. And like, that never stopped me from thinking like, oh, well, there's still going to be something else bigger that I'm going to be moving towards. So I think sometimes you just have to accept that like right now, this may be what it is, but it's only when you give up on the future thing that you're trying to get to, that thing that you're going through today, that I have to eat, becomes your reality. You can still always choose to, and I don't want to say this to minimize people who are going through like actual systemic, like, challenges that may be more difficult to overcome. I mean, I'm a white dude. Like, it's a lot easier in this society for me to like not be presented with hurdles that other people may have. But just in terms of like on the very micro scale of like the choices you make as an individual, when you have the opportunity to look at things in a certain way that lead you to believe that you're capable of greater things and you can keep pushing towards that, I think that that's kind of what you have to keep in mind, because once you resign yourself that it's not going to happen, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right on. So focusing on maybe how just this little step right now is still continuing to move us forward, even if it's not exactly what we want to do, and staying the course, right? Being focused, even if we're stepping aside, we're still staying the course because we're still keeping our eyes on the end. Is that kind of what you're saying there, buddy?
Yeah. I mean, look, you have to wake up every day, but you still can go to sleep and dream. And I think every day you should also wake up and dream a little bit. And that, you know, the minute you stop doing that at all is you're resigned that it's not going to be any different. And I've just never been able to do that. I've always felt like, again, driven by this idea that like, if this is the only life that I get, if this is the only shot that I have, I have to do something with it. Like, I'm compelled to. I have no other option, because I'm driven internally by the idea that my life has to have a meaning and I get to assign that. So there's no quit in me. There's falling down. There's getting knocked on my ass. But for me, there's always getting back up, because I just, there's no quit in me like that. And again, that's not prescribing to anybody. Like, I'm not on a soapbox saying like, you have to do anything. But when I look at the way that I operate and how I found my purpose and what drives me and how I keep getting up and all those things, these are all the ways that they're tied together.
Yeah. Wow. That's strong, man. So, so let's get back to that thought about balance, because you said, as you introduced yourself, that you do about 14 things there.
Yeah.
So how do you do all that, man? Like, how do you compartmentalize? Are you just the most, you know, are you like living on your calendar, or how does that work, Jeff?
So I am a very organized, calendar driven person, task manager driven person. The way that I do it is I do something that a lot of people do not do. It's a very uncommon thing, but I am very rigid about my scheduling, and I am, for lack of a better term, I have a very, very tight velvet rope around my time. So when I had left an agency in mid-2019, and I really started to think like, what do I want to do next? So I took about 6 months off. My wife kind of carried the load. And I tried to think about who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do next, because I had spent a decade in social media. I didn't really want to do it. anymore. And I wanted to kind of shift towards leadership and culture and brand and all these different things that intersect. So I took all this time off. And when I came out of the gate in January 2020, I actually, before I had a single client or before I had anything, I had my schedule set. Here is how my schedule is going to go. Monday is my planning day. I use the afternoon for content. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are client days. And I have blocks available for that, 2 hour blocks here, there, and the other. So I have about 16 or 18 hours that I have dedicated to client work. And then Fridays I had for content projects. And right now I take my Fridays off and I spend that watching my daughter. So I work, you know, in terms of billable work, I work 3 days a week right now. And then Monday is my planning day and Friday I'm off. And I'll do stuff Saturdays and Sundays if I feel like it. I'm writing a book that's coming out in January. So I do all of these things by very, very tightly divvying up my time and being very inflexible about canceling those things for somebody else's priority. So all of the things on my calendar are based around my priorities and what I'm trying to get done and the work that I'm trying to do. And I have found in my life that when you tell people, here's how I work, here's how my time is available, here's what I bill for my time, do you want to work with me? It actually works a lot better than when you try to accommodate anybody that comes along and says, let's do work together. I'm very clear about what my priorities are, who I am, what I offer, how my time works. And I find that a lot of people really respect that. And my career has gotten a lot better since I've started making the time for the things that are important to me. Now, things have fallen off, mind you. So like I was doing like weekly videos for the Superhero Institute, and it was like, it was taking me all day. And then when the baby arrived, it was like, well, that's just not going to happen anymore. So it fell off. So things do fall off. But before we move into anything else, I wanted to actually flip and, you know, I don't know if you do this on your show, but on my show, you've been on my show, you know, I do the mic swap. I wanted to ask you about for you purpose and how you go, like you're a superhero, you've got superpowers. Like, how do you balance all the things that you're doing? What's the thing that you're after? What's the change you're trying to make in the world? Like, have you ever told your audience about that? Do they know what Phil Gerbyshack is after?
I don't know, Jeff. That's a fair question, right? So, but I'll answer your question. You know, what am I about, right? It really is about connection and connecting people to the other people that they need, connecting people to ideas, right? And connecting and making them simple. Because a lot of people, you know, they have these grandiose ideas that I think a lot of times are unexecutable because we don't know what the next step is. I mean, it's one of the reasons I do podcasts. One of the reasons why I agree to, you know, get on the other side, right, and be interviewed by smart folks like you, because it's sure as heck not self-promotion. I could give a crap less. I'm happy to toil in relative obscurity. That's not my goal ever, but it absolutely is to connect, right? And so if I can get to a new group of people that need, you know, to hear a message of hope, if you will, or gratitude, right? Because gratitude is one of my big things. I'm really grateful for a lot of the great stuff that's in my world, even the little stuff that's great. Helping people break that down into things that they can actually do, and then connecting that to more and the next step, and have a little bit of hope about that. I mean, that's what I'm all about. And how, you know, some days I miss that, right? Some days I'm pretty downtrodden as well. But when I really focus on that and I really think about the value that I can bring and the way that I can, you know, connect right now, honestly, with you and anybody who might be listening or watching or, you know, even tangentially in the background, I think that, you know, I'm able to be successful. And it's hard, man. There are days where I don't want to do it, bro. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I'm tired. Yeah. Right now, I'm tired. And yet, you know, the next step that I can make right now is to pull it in and to be, you know, be present for my family and to be present with them, right? And to get to that next step for them. I don't know if that even answers the question, but that's, you know, that's what hits my head.
No, I get it, man. And the connection piece is that thing that you're probably, when you're feeling that down, that's probably the thing that brings you back, right? Like you recognize, sure, this is a gift that you have to be able to connect people to other people, to information, and using that gift to pull yourself out is very superheroic, in my opinion. It's part of resilience. And I think to use it for the benefit of other people, even at your own expense sometime, is very superheroic. The self-sacrifice to do things for other people's benefit. You know, I appreciate that. And, you know, I hope that you are able to see that that's like your thing that can like get you going. So, you know, to come back to that, when you're feeling like you, when you need that extra jolt, jump into the connection, man.
Yeah, for sure. Right. For sure. And that's where I think part of that comes with being able to coach myself, right. To be able to say, to your point, right, that knowing having that self-awareness to know that connection matters. So when I am feeling crappy, a lot of times my default would be to turtle in and to pull in and say, you know what, I'm just gonna be by myself. But I recognize that when I've done that, that has not been successful. That's actually been really unsuccessful. It's really made me more miserable for more long of a period of time. So I have, you know, pulled out it. I know one summer, man, was the hardest summer of my life. I think I must've interviewed 80 people and gotten tons of connection because frankly, I was just burnt to a crisp. And that helped a lot. That helped a lot because even though my default is to be by myself, I know, you know, and not ask for any help. I know that by doing that and having conversations, I was able to actually get help with sometimes without even asking for it, right?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate also the honesty of like sharing where your best intentions may go offline, right? So like, you know that for you, that if it gets too stressful or whatever, your tendency might be to retreat. I know for myself, one of the things that I struggle with sometimes is when I'm feeling stressed or when I feel like I'm not making enough of a difference, I kind of like overcompensate, over execute. And like, I'm like, let's go, let's take charge. And I will march full steam ahead, possibly even too fast for the other people that I need to bring along with me. I may steamroll conversations. I may talk over people. And I know that that's me. It's coming from the desire to make an impact. And when I feel like I'm not making enough, I know that I may turn to this, like, you know, I might try and force it, right? I may try and like bully my way to making the difference. And I know that that doesn't actually work. So that's one of the things that, you know, we were talking about balance before. I think even if you have the best intentions, sometimes those best intentions, if you try to force them, if you try to push too hard on them, can also wind up becoming a weakness. And that's a thing that a lot of coaches have talked to me about, is a lot of your strengths become your weaknesses, and a lot of your weaknesses can also be your strengths.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything taken too far or too little can definitely hurt you. I mean, I found that for sure, right? I mean, because 90 episodes in 3 months was way too much. Yeah. Certainly helped, right? But it was way too much. And so then I realized, okay, well, now I need to take the next month to actually process some of that. Because while it felt great to connect, I also was overstimulated and I had, you know, 3,000 ideas that I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta execute on this. And slowing that down, right? Picking one or two things to execute on. That really helped, man. That really helped, right? Breaking that down. And then I realized, I bet I'm not the only one like that, right? Breaking that down into manageable pieces, perhaps that's something others could benefit from. And that ended up being, you know, a big thing, even that I offered today, is being able to break it apart and see the steps and the big picture. Because a lot of times people can see one or the other. And so I'm grateful for that time, even though at the time it was hard as hell, man.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. And that's also something why I think you and I connect so well, is that's an ability that I think that I've been nurturing in myself for a long time, is being able to see the big picture and then break that big picture down into smaller isolated steps. And partly for me, that was a result of trying to really round out one of my big weaknesses, is that, you know, as someone who struggles with attention, I've found that without clear systems and without being able to take bigger ideas and break them down into smaller executable tasks in a system, I could just stay in the clouds, like ideating all day. Like, I'm great in a brainstorm, but like at some point those ideas need to become reality. And I've gotten better over the last decade, really by imposing very, very strict systems upon myself and building better processes. And that's helped me to really see things in a very process-oriented way, seeing the sequence of steps starting from the end and working backwards, breaking them into those smaller pieces, assigning due dates, responsibilities, all the sort of things that go with it, taking those small steps, breaking them into even smaller steps. And that's been really helpful. And I think that's one of the reasons why you and I are on such a good wavelength together, is a similar affinity for that skill.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think that's great. So let's talk more about superheroes, man. Let's talk about some of those, right? So DC or Marvel, who's your universe, Marvel. Man?
Definitely Marvel. Yeah. They're more relatable characters. DC or gods. I'm not about that. I'm about real relatable people who have great abilities and who struggle to manage what it means to have those, and who have real life situations that they have to struggle with. That's why I like comics and superheroes in the first place, is that if it's not framed within a more real world context, if it's just gods all the time, then you know, we don't have the tools to be able to utilize that and map it onto ourselves and gain a benefit from it. But, you know, when you take my, like, you know, my favorite superhero is like far and away Spider-Man, and it's the most relatable comic that's ever been created. It's about, you know, a teenager who struggles with depression, who struggles with, you know, the responsibility of the powers that he has, who struggles with girls, who struggles with his identity, who, there's so many things that, like, whether you're a teenager or even an adult, you know, all the fraud syndrome that's in there, like, there's not a person that, you know, you and I both know or interact with or in our circles that hasn't at some point mentioned it. Right. So that's all stuff that comes through in those comics. And I think that's what makes it so relatable for us, is that there's truth in those stories that we can pull out and we can utilize for ourselves.
Definitely. I totally agree, man. So if we add the X-Men into the Marvel universe though, like, what happens there? Because that's so different, right? I think when we think about Marvel, right, they are still superheroes that are very human, but often X-Men, I don't know. I'm not sure. How does that fit, Jeff? How does that fit for you?
Personally, I love it. And the main reason I love it is that I think now more than ever, we need the underlying message of the X-Men in our superhero stories. And the reason why is that there is a very clear parallel between race, gender, other forms of discrimination, and how that mirrors on to the world of the X-Men in the Marvel universe. The discrimination against mutants is, you know, a very, very thinly veiled sort of like allegory or analogy for the sort of issues that we have in our society now. And I think having those stories in there allows us to bring forward conversations that I think need to happen, that are happening, but they provide it in a pop culture venue, like a medium for us to all have a kind of a common common discourse around. Whereas, like, right now, a lot of the conversations are happening in more like intellectual pockets, or maybe they're happening in like very, very political pockets. But if we had those conversations taking place around like these billion-dollar franchises of entertainment, well, now we get to have a more open conversation. And you're starting to see some of that. You see with like Black Panther, with, you know, an all-black cast and you know, black director, like basically a groundbreaking thing in like the world of movies. And then you have, you know, the issues that happen with Captain Marvel and like Brie Larson being outspoken and some people taking offense to that. And I think these things are good in some ways because they're kind of bringing conversations to the surface that need to happen. So on the side of like bringing the X-Men in, like just talking from a purely like a social perspective, I think it's good. On the comic side, I mean, come on, now we're bringing in Omega level mutants. We're talking about reality distortion. We're talking about people who are born with these abilities. You've got Wolverine, come on. You've got Magneto, possibly one of the greatest villains of all time in any form whatsoever. And then if we expand X-Men to take in the entire Fox properties and we bring in the Fantastic Four, now we get access to my favorite villain of all time, Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom is far and away the best villain that has ever been created in the Marvel universe. And I'm just excited for him to be a part of the Marvel universe at some point.
Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom is by far the best of all villains.
Oh, come on. Why is that?
Okay. First of all, he's brilliant. Like the most brilliant of all. So here's the thing. When I think about villains, this is the dark side coming out here. When it comes to superheroes, I want the most heroic, honorable, pure of superheroes. I want there to be just, I love Captain America. I love Spider-Man. I love people that have like pure ideals, self-sacrifice, you know, defending the little guy, protection, the whole thing. When it comes to villains, I want pure evil. I want like, my second to Dr. Doom would be Carnage, because it's just a psychotic serial killer maniac. But Dr. Doom, the reason why I think he's far and away the best is that, one, his intelligence rivals anybody in the Marvel universe. Really only Reed Richards would go toe-to-toe with him on in terms of intellect. He's defeated Thanos. He's like, he's basically in like, he's rewritten reality. Like in the, if you go into like the Dr. Doom archives, like dude has been among the most powerful and evil of all. He's menacing looking. He's got just an incredible power set. He's mysterious, badass, just everything about Dr. Doom. And I can name a lot of other villains I really like, but if I were to take any of them and put them toe to toe with Dr. Doom, there's not many that are going to win, because the dude's just too smart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible, man. That's pretty cool. So I gotta ask. So you love Spider-Man. Is there a superhero that you're like, man, this one just doesn't fit. This one just doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, tons of them. There's so many like thrown away, forgotten superheroes. But if we're sticking to like the big ones, like the ones that are like, you know, in the upper echelons of like notability. I mean, Jason Momoa aside, Aquaman's kind of a dumb character. Of course, I don't really like DC. Again, I think Superman has grown well beyond his usefulness because he's basically invulnerable to everything and he just keeps getting stronger and stronger in the comics and he gets new abilities and like there's just no edge to it, right? There's no danger. And I think there needs to be, for every good superhero, there needs to be some weakness. There needs to be some, yeah, and like kryptonite, that's it. Like, so I don't know, like I'm not hating on Superman. Just if I'm like, if you're giving me like the full top tier superheroes, like the say you take the top 10 or 20, who would I kick out? Actually, I wouldn't kick out Superman because he's too important in the history of comics. So just like respect for the game, I couldn't get rid of him. But I can't really think of any that like I just don't like. I just like them all. I really do. Like I'm trying to think of one that like I'm just not feeling, but like I really think that I just about appreciate every superhero for some reason or another.
That's cool, man. That's cool. Yeah. So you're a big Doctor Strange fan?
I think Doctor Strange is awesome. And I didn't really know a lot of it. So like, you know, everybody's got their comics that they would read or they've got their like superheroes that they like. And I never really got into Doctor Strange because it was like magic and like magic is not really my thing. Like, so like, I don't like Lord of the Rings and stuff like that because like, I don't like period pieces and elves and gnomes and any of that stuff or wizards. Like none of that stuff's my thing. So like when I first heard about Doctor Strange, I was like, great, magic. Like, the kind of like anything goes sort of thing. But when I started to look more into like Doctor Strange's involvement in like all of the Marvel universe, either cinematic or comic, I mean, he's a very important character and I can no longer hate on him. And I really like Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. And I'm super excited for Doctor Strange 2, The Multiverse of Madness. One, directed by Sam Raimi, amazing. And then two, coming out of WandaVision, which no spoilers for anyone. I'll just keep that to myself. But there's the things that are coming in the Marvel Universe are going to be like totally amazing.
Cool, man. So if you had a choice, super suit or superpowers, what would you want? You can't say both.
Superpower.
Which one?
Superpower. Which one? So is it one or is it one superheroes set?
Okay, well, pick either way.
Okay, well, obviously I would pick Spider-Man just because he's my favorite. If we took that off the table, my next choice would either be Wolverine or Hulk. Because I do feel like, again, like both of them tap into like a little bit of like latent aggressiveness. And it's like, you just want to like Hulk out sometimes. But if I were picking one superpower, I will always forever say telekinesis, which is basically like the force. It's the ability to like move things with your mind and everything. And I just think that would be like the dopest power ever. You could be like, man, I'm sitting up here now. Like I need to refill my cold brew. I would just, you know, get it from the fridge. I think that would be awesome. So yeah, telekinesis would be the number
one. So what is it about Spider-Man's powers though that you love? Well, because I get it as a character. I totally get that, man. But he like swings on webs.
Yep.
And he's strong. Like what's the power there that I got to be missing something.
So there's a couple things. One, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, if you were like, what superpower would you have? They say, I want to fly, right? I don't want to fly. Because to me, while that seems like it'd be fun, I don't think it would be nearly as fun as swinging around on webs. Like the idea of swinging around a city on webs. And like, I play the Spider-Man video games a lot. And like, that is like my meditation. That and cooking are like the two places I go to just get away. So just swinging around the city, like running on the sides of walls, being able to like climb up the sides of buildings and like stick to things. But I think the spider sense is kind of the thing, like the sensing of incoming danger. That's like, so just the whole set of it, I think, is just really a cool set. But I would be lying if I said that it truly isn't just that I'm a major Spider-Man fanboy. And that my primary reason for picking that is just I love the Spider-Man stories. I love the Spider-Man movies. I love the Spider-Man comics. So like it's probably more of just like a fanboy thing than anything else. Cause realistically there are probably like better, more useful powers in this world than that. But I don't know. I just love the character.
Cool. Yeah. I'm a big Iron Man fan. Yeah. I love the brilliance of the guy. I mean, truly the ability to make something out of nothing. I wish I had that. I'm not an engineer, right? Yeah. I that's just not my gift at all. I think he's I guess in many ways, maybe it's because he's everything I'm not, right? Like he's really smooth in a lot of ways.
You're smooth.
Oh, you're kind. I don't think so, man.
Glasses. You're pulling them off just like you always do. That's smooth.
I guess, man. So I don't know, but it's Iron Man for me, right? Like I really see a lot there. I love, you know, what I can't remember which movie it was in, but he said, you know, hey, Captain America, I think said, who are you without your suit? He goes, yeah, oh, I'm a billionaire playboy philanthropist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Genius. Well, that's
Avengers.
Yeah. Like I love that. Right. I mean, yeah. Billionaire, not because I crave for money, but because of all the good that, I mean, I know I could help a lot of people. Because people, you know, I'm fortunate that I've touched a lot of people. I could make a lot of good, right? Playboy, man, probably not so much. I mean, yeah. I love my sweetheart. I don't need that. But the whole, you know, philanthropist, the giving it back, right? And the genius part, just the ability to put things together the way that he does, the way that he takes the world that his dad created and pushes that into and gets that is indeed the core of who Iron Man is.
Yeah.
From his father. I mean, because, you know, my dad, I love my dad. His birthday was this week. I love my dad. But I would not say that we were ever close growing up. I mean, my dad is, so he's 74 this year and I'm 47. So we're the reverse, mm-hmm. right? So he was 27 when I was, you know, when I was born. And I just, you know, I mean, it's a different generation, right? I'm real touchy, feely, huggy. And my dad was not the huggy type at all. So it's always, you know, I was always kind of, you know, the mutant, if you will, in the family. Cause that's always been me. Right. I've always done that. And it's interesting cause I've been able to bring that out of other people that don't have that. And probably for some people that probably makes them uncomfortable. And I think in one person in particular that I did, and I apologize, Barry, but yeah. So I think that's interesting, right? That'd be where I would go, man. And then to your point, the fact that he could fly around is really cool, man. I mean, that's all the way into outer space, right? And I mean, almost do the Superman thing, right? Where he would reverse the whole polarity of the Earth, like, woo, yay, that's pretty freaking cool, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a huge Iron Man fan, don't get me wrong. I just, when I think of Iron Man, I also think of all of the comic runs with his alcoholism and, you know, the ego and the various different things where he almost destroys the planet. You know, he saved the planet in so many of these movies, but he is also kind of the cause of why these things happen. So, I mean, look, I cried in, I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen Endgame at this point, so spoilers, but like when he snaps at the end of Endgame, the first time I saw it in the theater, I was with friends, so I kind of held it all together, but I was starting to get a little choked up. And when I saw it again in the theater by myself, and I bawled, dude, I bawled in the theater. I was just like, Tony Stark, lost my mind. No, I get it. I think he's and Robert Downey Jr. really brought the character to life for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Nobody better than RDJ to do that. Just like nobody better than Chris Evans to be Captain America. Yeah, that casting of the original, you know, four or five superheroes. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Really cool, man.
Say, Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa was also expert casting.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that one's another like nail on the head. And I think, who's the other one that I was thinking this like I think Tom Holland for Spider-Man is phenomenal. Jake Gyllenhaal for Mysterio was really great. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great casting that they've had.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. So as we bring this home, let's bring it back to kind of where we started, Jeff. How do we take the next couple steps, or maybe just the first step, man, to finding that inner superhero without it being super scary and without it being something that we can't do?
Yeah. So I'll make it super practical. There's something that I came up with called the superhuman framework. And the superhuman framework, when paired with the superhero code, is your pathway to becoming a superhero, in my opinion. So the superhuman framework works like this. There are five components to it, and they typically go in this order, but they don't have to. And they're what I would call meta abilities. They are not in themselves individual single abilities, really, so much as they are abilities that lead to other abilities. So the first is learning. The the first step in becoming superhuman is that you have to be able to learn and consume information and be able to process it and store it and do things with it. So the first is learning. The second is thinking. That is, you have to be able to not just take what it currently exists, but you have to invent new things. And that happens by way of thinking. You have to understand your existence by reading philosophy. You have to understand the world around you by thinking about science and how it works and learning and then thinking about it. You have to, if you're interested in a subject, you can't just take what's already been done and then blurt it back out. You have to think about it and make it your own. That whole Pablo Picasso quote, good artists copy, great artists steal. And what he meant by that was that to steal it is to take it and make it your own, not just to copy it and say it's yours, but you take it, turn it into something new and claim ownership over it. So that's what thinking does, is it gives you the ability to take what you've learned and take ownership over it and make it something new. Then communication is the third part. So learning, thinking, communication. Once you've learned things and you've thought about them and you have these new skills and these new ideas and whatever, you have to be able to communicate it to people. You have to communicate your vision, what you know. And then you take that communication and you move it into the fourth power, which is leadership. If you can lead people, when you learn things, you think them, you communicate it, and then you can lead people, you can build a movement. And then the final step is realization. That's productivity, getting things done, taking big ideas and making them into manageable steps. So you take those five abilities and you have the ability to essentially become superhuman in anything you're trying to do. Let's say you want to become, I don't know, a CFO at a company. First, you learn about finance. Then you have to think about it and you have to understand it and you have to be able to conceptualize the ideas in your mind so that you really truly understand them. Not just that you took in the information, but that you actually think about it and understood. Then you need to be able to communicate to people like in an interview, and you need to be able to talk about it, and you need to be able to be a leader in that space. And once you're able to do that, you can lead a finance department, and then you have to get things done. So you have to be able to manage people. You have to be able to manage projects, et cetera. So no matter what it is that you're trying to do, this superhuman framework is the step to get there. And then the final piece is applying the superhuman code or the superhero code. And this is the ethical framework. So this is about putting in all of the things that make you a superhero, the things you have to consistently do. So there's resilience, there's courage, there's confidence, vulnerability, responsibility, compassion, protection, self-sacrifice, growth, and empathy. Those are the 10 aspects of the superhero code. And all of them put you in the position of being a person who is willing to do what needs to be done for the benefit of the greater good. Truth, justice, the American way, all that sort of good stuff. So those are it's me rambling on a bunch of the things, but I would say if you want to become someone who's working towards something, decide the change you want to make in the world, learn about how to do it, think about how to do it, communicate about how to do it, lead others in a movement to do it, and then get shit done.
Love that, man. So much goodness there, Jeff. So much stuff that we can do to actually be the change that we wish to see and become truly superhuman. I love that, man. So the new book you said is coming in January. I'm imagining you'll put it up at jeffgibber.com and probably talk about it on your superheroinstitute.org. But tell me, just give me a little sneak peek, Jeff. What's the book? Is it the superhero framework or what's going on?
No, so the book Becoming Superhuman will be coming later on. That's going to be my third book. My first book that I'm releasing in January is called The Lovable Leader. I'm publishing it with Page Two. And it's a book about the concept that basically all business is personal. This idea that it's not personal, it's just business. I don't buy that. I don't believe that. I think it's nonsense. I think that to be a great leader, you have to be able to understand and appreciate people. You have to understand that in order to lead great teams, it's all about the people. So I have an entire series of different frameworks in there. There's, you know, three big ideas that are in there. There's a way that you need to think about what leadership is. And then there's, you know, some tips on how to build an ideal team, something that I call the 8 commitments of the team. So there's a bunch of different things that are in there. It's a step-by-step book that's really ideally focused on people who are new to leadership roles. So that could be, this is your first time managing people. It could also be people that want to rethink what it means to be a leader in the position they're already in. But ideally, the way that I want people to think about it is that leadership is not a title. It's a thing that you do. It's a way that you are. So if you want to be a leader, this is going to be a book for you. And it's going to be a book for you to make the world a better place. So that's going to be the first book. And then I have another book planned that's a follow-up that plugs right in. It's a shorter book that's also about leadership. Third book is going to be Becoming Superhuman. And then I got a bunch more planned. But in January, look for the book. If anybody wants to pre-order it or get on the list for pre-order, then you don't have to put in a credit card or anything. You just say like, yes, let me know when it's there. On my website, jeffgibber.com/support, there's a little form that you can sign up for and say like, hey, give me that book when it's ready to go. Let me know it exists.
Awesome. That's great, man. I can't wait to read it. The Lovable Leader coming in January. But today, you are my superhero, my friend. Thank you for spending time with me. This is really awesome, Jeff. I love talking frameworks and stuff with you. We could talk all day.
I really value whenever you want, man. Anytime you want. I love talking to you, Phil. You're a blast.
Yeah, but you are too. Thank you, Jeff. You're the best, man. And hopefully, folks, you got something from this that you can actually do. Check out Jeff's Superhuman Framework. Get to work and just go. Figure it out. You can do this. We believe in you. You are superhuman. Take care, everyone.